Hi, I'm Joe Mangiacati, host of Sundays at 3 o'clock right here on AM 1060 WBIX. And I want to tell you about a very famous restaurant, one you probably already know about, Ken's Steakhouse. That's right, Ken's Steakhouse on Route 9 on the Framingham Natick Line has for generations provided, well, the best in quality food and service. Hey, Ken and Florence Hannah began that tradition over 60 years ago, and I want you to try Ken's out so much, I'm going to buy your dessert. That's right. When you stop by Ken's for lunch or dinner, dessert is on me. Just say, Joe's buying dessert, and you choose from their huge selection of fresh, baked, homemade desserts. That's right. With Ken's Bakery right on the premises, you're sure to have the best dessert you can, and it's always better when someone else is buying. So check it out. Stop by Ken's, Route 9 Framingham, and let Joe Mangiacati from Out With Joe and WBIX take care of the dessert for you. Hey, Ken's, a very famous restaurant.
You want pain relief that's fast? You want pain relief that's strong? Then you want Advil Liquid Gels. They're faster and stronger on tough pain than Tylenol Rapid Release Gels. Advil Liquid Gels. They rush real liquid relief right to wherever you hurt, so you can forget about your pain and get back to your day. Advil Liquid Gels. Liquid fast. Advil strong.
Brands are trademarks of their respective owners. Use as directed.
You're on the money. The daily talk show making the most out of your finances. On the Money features advice from local experts on building wealth, saving and investing, and homes and loans. And now, your host for On the Money.
Good evening, I'm Gary Pomerantz, and I'm here with my colleague Hayden Traub, and you're listening to On the Money, our weekly radio show, airing from 6 to 7 every Monday, addressing timely topics of concern to those interested in growing and protecting their wealth.
And this is Hayden Traub. I'm a CFA, that's a chartered financial analyst, and have an MBA, and have been a practicing investment manager for the past 22 years. I'm also the principal of my own firm, Traub Capital Management, based here in Needham.
And this is Gary Pomerantz. I'm a certified financial planner, an investment advisor, and the managing director of Lexington Wealth Management. I've been a practicing investment advisor and financial planner for over 14 years. Before we begin, our lawyers would like us to let you know that the opinions expressed during our show tonight are only ours, and they're not the opinions of our respective firms, except for Hayden, because his firm is his respective firm. Also, any information we provide tonight should and cannot be construed as advice specific to your own portfolio. Specific advice could only be rendered after Hayden or I had a thorough understanding of your overall financial situation and your risk tolerance and your time horizon, and that can definitely not happen during the constraints of this radio show. The focus of tonight's show is indexing and passive investing. During the market swoon last year and early this year, conventional wisdom led many to believe that active managers could outpace index funds by picking winners or moving to cash in a down market. Did conventional wisdom hold true? Recently, some investors have also begun to ask why we should even bother to hold on to index funds in the face of what might prove to be a continuing bear market. So in search of answers, we plan to have a lively discussion tonight, along with today's guest, who will be joining us during the second half of the show, Paul Brackey, a managing director in charge of passive mutual fund management and indexing strategies at State Street Global Advisors, where he oversees more than $500 billion in managed assets. It's always a good idea to start the week off with a recap of what happened last week in the markets and also in the news, and so some guidance regarding what we can look forward to this week. So, Hayden, what do you think?
Well, before I start that, I just wanted to let people know, if they want to know which way the market's going to go tomorrow, to call in and we'll tell them at 888-205-2263.
Right, you realize that he has his tongue firmly in his cheek right now.
Yes, it is. But if you do want to call in, the number is 888-205-2263. And so for a recap of what's been going on in the world since we were here last week, I think the biggest news was the fact that there is now an overhaul coming of the whole financial regulatory system. Some of the big news, I would say, relates to, at least as it relates to what we do and what we often talk about, relates to the fact that they want to create a financial consumer protection agency. And the important part of that is the fact that they're now talking about changing the rules for registered investment advisors as opposed to brokers. And most people don't realize what I'm about to say, so take some notes here. There's actually a pretty notable difference between a registered investment advisor, which is what I do, Hayden, and what Gary does as part of his firm, and a broker. And the key difference is we are held to do everything as a fiduciary for our clients as a registered investment advisor, meaning we always have to do kind of what's best for them.
Right. What's best for the client.
Right, best for the client, right. Thanks. And whereas for a broker, in other words, anyone who's not a registered investment advisor who's providing advice, they are not held to that standard. Their standard is just that that the investment, whatever that particular investment that they suggest is prudent. So the example I like to give is, since we're talking about index funds here tonight, the reason to buy an index fund is low cost, among other reasons, but you certainly want to buy a low cost fund. And yet, you could have a broker pitch you going into an index fund where there's a load of, say, 5% or 3% or whatever it is. Which kind of defeats the purpose, and chances are that fund also is generally a higher expense fund. And that's perfectly okay the way the laws are written now. There's nothing to prevent a broker from doing that. Right. But certainly people in our position, as registered investment advisors, would probably get in trouble for doing something like that. Right. So
now, not to cast aspersions at the entire industry, because most brokers wouldn't do that because it's not in their financial interest to do that. Right. They need to do the best by you so that you would continue to be their clients over the course of the long term. But but the standard is actually not the same. We're trying to point that out.
Right. So that's a big change. So it's not clear where the legislation or regulation is going to go. But there's definitely discussion, and it's been an ongoing debate for a long time, actually, about that. So that's a piece of big news. And then some of the other things as part of this reform, there's a piece in there that shareholders would have greater say on executive pay. So won't that be fun? where shareholders can shoot down the compensation for different executives, et cetera. Or not. I'm sure there'll be lots of times where they want to raise what the proposal is, give them more money, right? But anyway, I thought that was an interesting piece. And so I won't go through all the details, but the only one other piece of that that's interesting is they're talking about having exchange for derivatives. Not that there aren't already exchanges, but to put more of the derivatives that kind of blew up and caused some of these problems that we saw last year, put them on an exchange, so right. Swaps and things like that.
So that way they're all on the radar and they can gauge the risks.
Right.
Isn't there also an issue of making sure that there aren't that banks don't get too large to the extent that they could potentially blow up the system?
Yeah, but the interesting thing about that is there's nothing in the proposed regulations that really does anything to address that. So that's actually an interesting point is that's part of what caused the problems and the need for the bailouts, and yet that piece isn't really addressed very well.
But right. In other words, they'll know which banks could potentially be the problems by virtue of all this regulation, but within the regulation, we don't understand how that would be dealt with.
Right,
which is kind of interesting.
Right. So, that's kind of what got us in the mess with AIG is they had all these insurance-like contracts that they wrote, and nobody had any idea. So, so that's really the news on that front. And then a couple of other pieces of information.
I just want to point one more thing out that in fact there was a question for a while about whether or not they would actually have one agency that would regulate everything, and that was actually sort of thrown out. Over the course of the last couple of weeks, I guess. Right. And now they're sticking with all of the sort of hodgepodge of different agencies that are currently out there in alphabet soup, sort of full of agencies.
Right.
Which I, many, many individuals, I think Wall Street's probably thrilled to hear that they didn't have this new agency. But for people who are really looking for true reform, I think it was a disappointment.
Right, right. I mean, they're talking about adding an agency, this consumer protection agency, but not a big consolidated agency, probably. Some of the other things of note, I think is important to note, a quarter of the states now have unemployment greater than 10%. That's a big number. And in most cases, they're at record highs since they started tracking it, which is, you know, not back to the Depression. That's bad news, sort of. But the interesting thing about that statistic, even though it's kind of bad as it relates to the economy, what you'll find is generally the stock market will reach come to its bottom somewhere around the time that unemployment peaks. So in its perverse way that it usually works, it isn't necessarily a bad sign for the stock market that unemployment is at very elevated levels. But of course, if it keeps going up for a while, then that's definitely some bad news.
Right. That's actually a really good segue into where we think the economy is right now. And if you look at a glass that is either half empty or half full, depending on your perspective. Right now, I think Hayden just made a case, one of the cases that are out there for half full. Maybe another is the TED spread, which is a measure of the difference between the Treasury curve and the LIBOR swap curve. Let's try to explain that on the radio. I think all we have to really understand is that that's narrowing. In fact, that means the economy is getting better. Also, Leading Economic Indicators Index is showing positive movement. It has for the past 2 months, and that would be a bullish sign. So these green shoots that Obama and Bernanke have been talking about, maybe if you're looking for them, that's where you'd find them, along with, believe it or not, a green shoot being the fact that unemployment is peaking or seems to be, there's even a 14% in Michigan unemployment rate right now. And new jobless claims may have peaked, which is a signal of impending economic recovery. But, then you have the bears out there like the Norio Rubinis and others. Who are looking at the half-empty scenario, and capacity utilization, which is the degree to which manufacturing facilities are producing their goods. It's currently below 70%, 80% is normal. That's a bearish sign. High-yield bond credit spreads, they're narrowed, but they're still at all-time highs, and that's a negative. And there's the Institute for Supply Management Index, which is a composite index that people in the industrial manufacturing industry fill out, and they are signaling a sort of a bearish outlook. So I really don't know whether it's half empty or half full right now, Hayden. What do you think? I'm not willing to take a swing at this.
Right. Well, I think most of the time it's going to seem like it's a hard answer to come up with. But we are kind of at an inflection point where, if we get we're kind of at the point where, we're either at the end or near the end of the recession, or maybe seeing another down leg. I think more likely the economy is likely to improve.
But with fits and starts in between. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, we can talk about that maybe when we come back from the break a little bit more, and also about valuations and things like that. So if you'd like to call in and talk about that, you can call 888-205-2263. You're listening to On the Money with Gary Pomerantz and Hayden Traub, and we'll be back after this break.
Traub Capital Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Traub Capital Management's founder, Hayden Traub, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Traub Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at traubcapital.com.
Skyrocketing cost of living are forcing mature Americans to take a new look at reverse mortgages. Today, over 300,000 seniors have tapped new monthly income and reduced debt with this program. Maybe you've heard, but just don't understand reverse mortgage yet. Simply, a reverse mortgage is the opposite of traditional mortgage, where the lender pays you to live in your home. Confused? Hi, it's Dean George. I found a great resource in Comfortable Retirement, the free service that's referred over $2 billion in home value to their specialists. They can help see if this government-backed program is right for you. So if you're a mature American over 62 with significant equity in your home or condo, call Comfortable Retirement right now. You'll get their new information kit, DVD, and a free no-obligation consultation. And unlike everybody else, you'll be assigned your own personal reverse mortgage specialist. Go ahead and secure your future with Comfortable Retirement.
Call for your free information kit at 1-800-518-1300. That's 800-518-1300 for your reverse mortgage information kit. 800-518-1300.
Gary Pomerantz, Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management, is a certified financial planner and investment manager. He has been successfully leading clients through wealth transitions such as retirement, inheritance, or sale of business for over 14 years. If these turbulent times have left you in need of a comprehensive review of your financial strategy and condition, please contact Mr. Pomerantz to set up a complimentary consultation at 800-626-1566. That's 800-626-1566.
Go aboard a Captain John Whale Watch in Plymouth Harbor and cruise in comfort to Stale Wagon Bank. Experience the magic of Cape Cod Bay from two observation decks. Or sit in the climate-controlled main cabin and enjoy your favorite foods and beverage from the galley, including cocktails. In no time, you'll be in the feeding grounds of nature's most awesome creatures, humpbacks, finbacks, and mink whales. An experienced naturalist will help you understand the whales and their behavior. New England's most experienced fleet has a 99% sighting since 1977. So make sure your whale watch adventure is with Captain John Boats. Call 1-800-242-2469 for reservations. That's 1-800-242-2469 for the perfect whale watching adventure, sightings guaranteed.
Hi, you're listening to On the Money. This is Hayden Traub, and I'm here with Gary Pomerantz. The phone number, if you'd like to call in and ask any questions, is 888-205-2263. And before we went to the break, we were talking about what's going on in the economy, markets, the world, what happened last week, and regulations and so on. A few other things before we get to kind of our main topic, which is passive investment and indexing. There's actually lots of news this week, and I think we get credit maybe for not even bringing this up, and we're already like 20 minutes into the show that, you know, the market got crushed today. So it was down 3% for those who don't know, roughly. And there's a lot of news, which may be why people are a little bit on edge. A lot of news coming up this week. The Fed's meeting starting tomorrow, and so they'll have their statement on Wednesday. There's existing home sales, new home sales, things like that. And we're going to get a GDP and initial jobless claims report. So there's lots coming up this week in terms of news. And I think people are starting to get to the point now where being less bad isn't good enough. You know, for a period of time, you know, March, April, and May to a large extent, the people's expectations had fallen so low that I think, you know, all the reports had to be in terms of earnings or economic, all it had to be was not apocalyptic. Right. And, people were relieved. But I think that given the rally we've had, I don't think that's going to suffice anymore. And I think that's why, you know, you're starting to see a bit of a sell-off. Last week, the market was down about 3% as well. So we've definitely had the market come down. And that was something we talked about last week, that maybe it had come too far, too fast. You know, we're looking at valuations of PEs are around 16 for the market. For those who don't know what a PE is, PE is the price to earnings ratio. You know, so what you're paying for each dollar of earnings, you're paying $16 for each dollar of earnings, and that's kind of on the high side, as we talked about last week. And now with the pullback, you know, well, if earnings, you know, have expectations haven't changed, now it's, you know, back to 15, which is kind of a normal level. You know, if you look back in history, 15 is probably about the long-term average for the market. And that seems a little more realistic given all the problems that we have. So, you know, I'm still concerned in the short term that we might get a bit more of a sell-off. I don't think we're going to go back to the lows of March, but...
Right, and also neither, I think I can speak for Hayden and myself, neither of us are short-term thinkers. We're both long-term investors. Although I know within my firm now we're meeting quarterly with clients, you know, so that we are rebalancing portfolios. But I think sticking to your long-term discipline is the most important thing. Right. And, you know, not trying to second guess where the market's going today or tomorrow. And is the glass half empty or is it half full? We are not day traders, and we're not subscribing, you know, to a day trading philosophy at all. Right. But it's important to understand where the valuations are, so that when you know if you are rebalancing your portfolio, say you had 60% in fixed income, you have 40% in equities, and right now you have 50-50. It's time to be actually shifting back towards your 60% allocation and protecting some of your gains, just because that's what your allocation is supposed to be over the long course of time. And if it's supposed to be the other way around, you head in the other direction. So as the market moves down, just focus in on rebalancing your portfolio if it moves more than 5% out of what your target allocations are, of the course.
There's one other thing that I think is important to mention, since you know I spend a lot of time thinking about this issue, which is insider transactions. So all insiders at a company have to report their transactions in their own stock, senior management. And that ratio of sellers to buyers, meaning insiders that are selling, is now up to 9-1. At the bottom of the market in March, it was down to 1-1. So it's actually normal that you see more selling by insiders than buyers, because they're natural sellers. They get paid in stock. They have a lot of stock. They get options, which get them stock. So it's normal to have more selling than buying. But 9-1 is a pretty high level. And that worries me, because you know nobody should know their companies better than you know the insiders at their own company. So it's a little bit worrisome, but maybe that's part of why we're seeing this recent sell-off over the last week or so. But
right, I mean the the contra argument to that is that these guys might people might be at this point just taking some gains. Things had swooned so low, people saw their retirements disappearing, and now suddenly. Yeah, they are back at sort of reasonable, not even reasonable levers. I think maybe if they went down 50 and then you came back 30, you're still at 65% of the total.
Right.
So, but just to get to those levels, which were levels of last year, people were questioning would ever exist again, might be enough for people to say, hey, you know, now I have it. Now I really could retire. I better just take it off the table and be a little more conservative.
Well, yeah, I think that's part of it is back in March, I think people that were on the inside, whether they thought the stock... Whatever they thought, they probably weren't thinking, well, this is a great time to be selling the stock. They probably held off. So I think there was probably some pent-up selling as well, even for people that weren't even thinking about the value of the stock. It probably, in many cases, got so low that they said, well, I'll just hold off for now. But, that still is meaningful in the sense that they at least think it's come back enough that it's not ridiculously cheap that they don't want to sell.
If any of you out there have questions about, what might be going on in the economy currently, or you'd like to chime in with just thoughts, suggestions, worries, phone number 888-205-2263.
All right. So anyway, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, the theme for tonight that we're going to talk about is indexing and passive investment, and something we feel have many opinions about, let's say. And we have a guest here tonight. His name is Paul Brackey. He's the Senior Managing Director of State Street Global Advisors and Head of the Global Structured Products Group. That's the group that oversees their index funds and passive investments. And in that capacity, oversees 65 portfolio managers worldwide. That covers 800 portfolios with assets in excess of $500 billion, which that's even a lot of money in these days of trillion dollars thrown around. In addition, Paul's a member of the SSJ Investment Committee and a member of the Senior Management Group. And prior to joining State Street in 92, Paul was a portfolio manager at Bankers Trust in charge of quantitative investment and arbitrage strategies for 8 years. Anyway, he's done several other things before that, but I'll move on and just say that he is a graduate from Indiana University and an MBA from University of Chicago. Yes, University of Chicago, my alma mater. So anyway, with that introduction, we'd like to bring Paul into the conversation to talk about indexing and passive investments.
All right. Welcome, Paul.
Thanks for having me.
Now, Paul, you're a subscriber to the belief that the markets are efficient or semi-efficient, something in between those two things.
Very efficient.
And so, at this point, people have been after the market swoon that we just went through. I think many people actually right now are questioning why they have index funds in their portfolio at all. Many individuals believe that this is a stock picker's market, that in fact they should be moving back to active management. Active management was supposed to have protected them during the downturn. And then now during the time when the market starts to move ahead, they should be being able to pick out those winners that will be advancing at a pace that will be greater than what the general market could. So what do you say to those who are saying this is a stock picker's market?
Well, I think active managers basically have a story for every market condition. So they supposedly protect you on the downside and they pick good stocks on the upside. But the reality and the empirical evidence is quite contrary to that. They have not done very well during the last market sell-off. And in general, the complaint is in up markets, they have any types of cash drag in their portfolio because they're not fully invested, unlike an index fund who's 100% invested 100% of the time.
Yep. And how about in the swoon, during the market swoon, did you find that active managers actually outpaced, or did passive managers actually your index
funds? Well, over the recent year, it's been pretty hard for active managers. They generally have a small value bias in their portfolio in general, and value stocks got hit particularly hard over this last period. So if you S&P does a pretty good analysis of all the mutual funds in the U.S., and they actually looked at the question of how well the average performance was during the past few down markets, and they did not outperform.
Thanks. You're listening to On the Money with Gary Pomerantz and Hayden Traub. And if you'd like to call in, the phone number is 888-205-2263.
Capital Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Traub Capital Management's founder, Hayden Traub, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Traub Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at traubcapital.com.
You too can be successful at real estate investing. The Eastern Massachusetts Real Estate Investors Association provides a networking and educational venue for both new and seasoned investors alike. Eastern Mass REIA meets the second Thursday of each month at 6:30 p.m. at the Rockland Holiday Inn. We sponsor educational events, seminars, and mentoring for investors of all levels. We are the number one source in the greater Boston area to get deals done. We are open to the public. Join us for our next meeting. Visit EasternMassREIA.com.
Take the Plymouth Ferry to Provincetown. Cruise in comfort and enjoy your trip across Cape Cod Bay without the hassles of a lengthy ride in Cape traffic. En route, enjoy a narrated tour of historic Plymouth Harbor. Before you know it, you're in Provincetown. Spend the day poking around unique shops and galleries. Enjoy a relaxing lunch in one of P-Town's famous restaurants. Experience Cape Cod's National Seashore. Captain John Boat's large, comfortable vessels feature an enclosed galley with your favorite foods and beverages, including cocktails, and a helpful, friendly crew. So travel to P-Town in style with Captain John Boats. Reservations call 508-747-2400. That's 508-747-2400. 10 a.m. departures daily from Mayflower to State Pier in Plymouth. Returns at 6 p.m. Take the express route to P-Town. Call 508-747-2400.
Gary Pomerantz, Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management, is a certified financial planner and investment manager. He has been successfully leading clients through wealth transitions such as retirement, inheritance, or sale of business for over 14 years. If these turbulent times have left you in need of a comprehensive review of your financial strategy and condition, please contact Mr. Pomerantz to set up a complimentary consultation at 800-626-1566. That's 800-626-1566.
Precious Rose, you color our world, till insects and disease turn it upside down. So backed by over a century of Bayer science, we've created Bayer Advanced All-in-One Rose and Flower Care. It's the only no-spray formula that works three ways, controlling bugs and disease as it feeds for brighter, more vibrant flowers. So count your blessings and stop to smell the scientific advances. Bayer Advanced. Better science, better results. BayerAdvanced.com.
Hi, this is On the Money with Hayden Traub. Just to reintroduce ourselves, I'm Hayden Traub. I'm a chartered financial analyst have an MBA and a practicing investment manager for the past 22 years, and a principal of my own firm, Traub Capital Management, based here in Needham. And my co-host is Gary Pomerantz.
Right, and I'm a certified financial planner and investment advisor and the managing director of Lexington Wealth Management. I've been an investment advisor and financial planner for more than 14 years.
So before we went to break, we had brought in our guest, Paul Brackey, to talk about the subject of indexing and passive investment. If you'd like to call in and ask any questions, the number is 888-205-2263. That's 888-205-2263. We realized maybe we should give a quick intro or explanation of what indexing is or passive investments, and some people may not know what that's all about. So in kind of simple terms, what you do when you have an index fund or how an index fund works is you buy all the stocks in the market or in that segment. So the most popular one is the S&P 500. And so what happens in that index or index fund, if you're invested in an index fund, the manager buys all 500 stocks, and they're bought at the weight. Their weight is based on the market capitalization or market value of each company. And the beauty of indexing is that you don't have to trade. As the weight of each company goes up in the index along with its price, so does your portfolio, and it'll just track neatly. And so the only times you really need to trade is if the index, the people who create the indexes decide to make a change, or if there's a merger or something like that. And so the big advantage, and we're going to get into this in greater detail, of an index fund is because of its lack of need to trade, there's no transaction costs borne by the fund. It's very easy to manage so that you don't have to pay an active manager to manage, and so generally expenses are low on the fund. And also, importantly, if it's in a taxable account, because there's very little turnover, it's also very tax efficient. So a lot of times for taxable money, it's a good way to invest in particular. So that's kind of indexing 101. And when we use the terms indexing or passive, it's pretty much the same thing. Passive investment means that you're not actively managing the portfolio. You're just kind of following an index. And so that's it. Anything to add to that, Paul, or is that, you think, cover the highlights?
Well, I would just say that passive management kind of has its genesis in modern portfolio theory. That kind of modern portfolio theory says the efficient portfolio is the market portfolio, and that's kind of proxied by things like the S&P 500 or the MSCI EFA index, that type of thing.
Right. And actually, to kind of put one more piece in there about why passive investing or indexing is considered a smart way to do things, at least in certain asset classes, is if you think of the market as a whole and all investors investing all together, everybody in aggregate is going to get the return of whatever the stocks return, less the costs, less the fees of trading and running the money and all that. So in aggregate, in theory, the aggregate has to underperform the index because the aggregate has all those costs borne by, you know, the trading costs, etc. So that's kind of the argument in favor of passive investment. So
as far as efficient markets are concerned, I'm glad that you brought that up, Paul, because since the overriding theory, modern portfolio theory, is the reason why we actually have passive investments, because there's a belief that it's hard to beat the index over the long course of time. So if you can't beat them, join them, right, basically. How do the peaks and valleys of the market get explained? If you believe the market's efficient, and that means that basically everything there is to know is in the markets already and the market's already priced that out, how do you end up in, you know, frothy, 2007s or, horrible 2008s? If all known information is built into the markets, wouldn't that argue for inefficient markets or at best semi-efficient markets? And also, does it matter how big the markets are? Is every market efficient? Trading in emerging markets, which probably would seem to be the least efficient class, or would that be just as efficient as trading in large cap U.S. stocks?
Well, it's important to understand what people mean when they say efficiency. When something's efficient, it doesn't mean it's correct or that it never makes mistakes. But it has a very specific meaning, and that is that the the expected price of something is going to be unbiased. So people generally don't consistently make the same mistake again and again and again. They make different mistakes going forward, but they don't make the same mistakes. And if you can find somebody that consistently makes the same mistake, then I can make money off that. So people are pretty good about learning from their past behaviors.
And so many people, I think, consider it indexing as the S&P 500. What are the other indexes that you typically are measured against, and what, you know, what asset classes do those represent, and are those popular as well? Is indexing popular across the board, or is it more just large cap?
Well, with the advent of ETFs, I think the investment strategy of indexing is becoming very popular. And in that sense, in a generic sense, if you can define any set of stocks and call that an index, no matter how narrow or how specific or even how random, you can index to that. So you can basically acquire the exposure very cheaply, and you're not paying an active manager to decide what stocks go in or out. So there's kind of a difference between indexing per se and kind of the broad passive asset exposure that people should be getting.
For those of you who are just tuning in, you're listening to Gary Pomeranz and Hayden Traub on The Money. The topic of our discussion tonight is passive investing versus active management. And we have our guest with us this evening, Paul Brackey, who is a managing director over at State Street Global Advisors, and he oversees over $500 billion of investment portfolios in passive and indexing strategies. And
let's talk about small cap for a minute. For those who don't know, probably the most popular index for that area, not probably, is the Russell 2000. Is that correct, Paul?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of the problems I see with indexing in small cap is everybody knows their rules, and active managers attempt to game that index. In addition, the turnover is very high. So, you know, one of the advantages of indexing is the fact that it's low turnover, so you don't have the cost of trading and all that. But if you go out and hire an active manager who has fairly low turnover and who has the potential, if they want to kind of game that index, don't you think it's feasible that, you know, there's a decent number of active managers, maybe even more than half, that can outperform the index?
Well, to break your question into two, you did bring up probably one of the more poorly constructed indexes. However, given that, active managers in the small cap arena still have difficulty beating it. But your point is well taken. And in fact, we estimated that to slavishly track the Russell 2000, people give up anywhere from 2 to 3% in terms of wealth just to track that. So it has its problems. But there are other ways to track a small cap asset class that doesn't require as much turnover.
So is that a different index, or is that just a different way to approach the problem?
Well, what some of the vendors have done now is, rather than doing a sort of, say, the top 3,000 stocks and once a year just cut the list at stock 1,000, what they do is they set bands around it. So just because a stock ranks at 1,001 doesn't necessarily mean it goes in from the 1,000 index into the 2,000. That it actually has to, its capitalization has to move through a certain band.
The
effect is to minimize turnover, precisely the problem you brought up.
Right.
Do index funds have a leg up too in trading sometimes? Block trading, for instance? I'm not sure if State Street is doing that. I know the Dimensional Fund Advisors is sort of famous for its block trading, and because they can decrease the cost through the size of their trades, kind of holding off, and then this huge block trade at a much lower value.
But one advantage index funds have over, say, active managers is that when we do trade, when people give us money or redeem out of the fund, we more often than not trade a slice of the portfolio, which is generally cap-weighted slice, which is a good proxy for liquidity. So even though somebody might give us, you know, a very large sum of money, $100 million, we're not putting $100 million in three names. We're basically putting $100 million in a nice representative slice of the market, and we're able to do that at extremely low commission rates because of our volume. Now, DFA does something a little different, and that is in the small cap arena, they are known on the street for having an appetite of being a buyer and hold. So if somebody's a distressed seller, DFA's probably a call.
So they're capitalizing. Dimensional Fund Advisor is capitalizing on this name on the street that they have.
Exactly.
Right. To be able to pick up on distressed sales. Great.
Well, you're listening to On the Money. This is Hayden Traub, and my co-host is Gary Pomerantz, and our guest in the studio is Paul Brackey from State Street Global Advisors. We'll be back in a few minutes. If you'd like to call in and ask any questions, the number is 888-205-2263. We'll be back after the break.
Capital Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Traub Capital Management's founder, Hayden Traub, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Traub Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at traubcapital.com.
Hello?
Hey, Dave, it's George. How are you doing? I'm calling to ask you a question.
Hey, Margie and I are doing great. We're living at North Hill now and loving it. What's the question?
Sarah and I have been waiting to move to North Hill for some time, but we haven't been able to sell our house. I see your house is still on the market, and yet you've made the move. How did you do that?
Easy. North Hill has something called the Dream Bridge Loan. It provides up to 12 months of interest-free bridge financing. It's a terrific offer. You should call on it.
Interesting. Sarah would be pleased if I told her we could move to North Hill before the house is sold. Thanks for the information.
One other thing, George. North Hill also has a new monthly service fee incentive. Depending on when you come in, you can have your service fee waived 30, 60, and even 90 days. Check that offer out as well.
Thanks, Dave. I'm glad I called you.
To learn more about North Hill's Dream Bridge Loan and Service Fee Incentive Program, call 781-433-6524. 781-433-6524.
Traub Capital Management is an investment advisor offering investment management and planning for individuals, families, and small businesses. Traub Capital Management's founder, Hayden Traub, is a chartered financial analyst with 22 years of global investing experience. Traub Capital Management is focused on determining the needs for each client and then maximizing returns relative to risk. For a complimentary review of your portfolio, call 781-453-3929 or visit our website at traubcapital.com.
Gary Pomerantz, Managing Director of Lexington Wealth Management, is a certified financial planner and investment manager. He has been successfully leading clients through wealth transitions such as retirement, inheritance, or sale of business for over 14 years. If these turbulent times have left you in need of a comprehensive review of your financial strategy and condition, please contact Mr. Pomerantz to set up a complimentary consultation at 800-626-1566. That's 800-626-1566.
Springtime in the backyard. Brought to you with a little help from Ace. For a limited time, buy a Miracle-Gro Liquifeed Kit for only $15.99 and get a $6 mail-in rebate, limit 2. A canopy chair, on sale for $19.99, and more. Use your Ace Rewards card and earn points. Plus, get expert advice to save you time and money. Now that's a value. Hurry in to Ace, the helpful place. Prices good at participating stores while supplies last. See store for details.
Hello, you're listening to Gary Pomerantz and Hayden Traub, and this is On the Money. Tonight's subject is active management versus passive investing. Our guest tonight is Paul Brackey. He is the managing director at State Street Global Advisors, and he oversees over $500 billion in passive and index-like strategies over at State Street. And I wanted to mention something that I saw in the journal today. In the money investing section, the title of the article is actually Active Managers Get the Cold Shoulder. And what this article mentions is that large pension funds are in the process of firing many active managers or individual managers. Active management is basically the idea that a person can manage the portfolio. They're firing people and they're hiring index funds at this point. And that's basically as to penalize those managers for poor performance. during the period of time that we went through the swoon last year and early this year. And so getting back to what Paul was saying is that indexes even were outperforming the active managers in the downtrend, and now they're even outperforming most active managers in the uptrend. So why do people have active management at all? I think that's really the question that Paul would like to ask everyone. Of course, that might be a little self-serving.
You want me to answer
Paul's perspective? So please, Paul, I'm going to give you your soapbox.
Well, why people choose active management? I think the best analogy that I can come up with is it's similar to the diet industry, so losing weight. We have a good medical theory out there that the way to lose weight is to reduce your caloric intake or to increase your exercise, right? And it's well established, it's empirically verified, and that's analogous to modern portfolio theory. But yet we still have people that will spend billions and billions of dollars on get thin quick schemes. So if you can explain the demand for that, I can explain the demand for active management.
You had an interesting, we were talking before the show, and you had an interesting analogy to gambling. I was thinking about Mind That Bird. It's the horse that won at a 50-1 odds during the Kentucky Derby. And I know that you believe active management is kind of those managers that can outpace over a long course of time. Those are the Mind That Birds, the guys that just got it right, but it's not necessarily because they could continue to get it right. It's sort of like the odds when you're at the casino. And so in regard to passive management, how actually did passive management do if we were to look through the different asset styles and classes over the course of the last year? Did active management really in every category actually passive strategies outpace active management?
Well, the question is, how exactly do you measure that? And it's not an easy thing to measure. A couple things you need to do is when you look at a universe of active managers, you have to make sure that you include the ones that went out of business, did very poorly. It's called survivorship bias. Most of the time, the databases just leave them out, so it appears as though the average active manager did better. The other thing to do is to properly evaluate the manager relative to his true benchmark. So if I'm a small cap growth manager, my benchmark shouldn't be the S&P 500, which is more of a large cap. So if you kind of make those differentiations, let me just throw out a couple numbers. And you can find this on the S&P website. It's called SPIVA, S&P versus the index. If we take, for example, small cap value funds, these are mutual funds that report that their benchmark is a small cap value. If you look at them versus S&P small cap 600 value, the index over the last year beat almost 73% of all those managers, and over a 5-year period beat 70%. So it's not even a coin flip at 50-50, which you'd expect if it was a random walk, but it's actually worse than that.
One of the things I think is interesting, if you look at that data, is the one area where active management in terms of style or size or whatever seemed to do better was in value. And the interesting thing about that, to me, it tells me that, and this is usually the case when active managers on average do better in a segment, is that was the worst performing segment probably over that time. Now, I don't know that to be a fact, but I'm guessing because that tends to be where all the banks and the financials were. And I know, value generally hasn't done too well. So what happens in those cases is, in a given style, managers tend to move out and drift out of that style to some degree. So by owning anything that wasn't, say, large value, that helped their performance. If they owned international, if they owned small cap, if they owned growth stocks.
Or cash. They could have moved to cash.
Right. So it was interesting to see that was the only place. I actually had found some data on 10 years. So this is from 99 through 2008. So, I don't know if you want to take a guess on what area where active managers did better. If not, I'll just throw it out there.
Small value?
No, it was actually in large growth, which makes sense because in the early part of the 10 years, you had terrible performance for the kind of NASDAQ tech-like stocks, right? And so I don't know this to be a fact, but I'm guessing large growth hasn't been a particularly good place for the last 10 years. If you look at the NASDAQ, it's still down from its peak by like 60-70%. So.
Also for international managers, it looks like active managers did maybe better than you would argue they should get credit for. And doesn't that have something to do with the construction of the IFA index, which had a larger component of Japan in there, if you look back. I mean, some of the better managers, when I run my screens in the office, they've outpaced. But when I look back at what their Japanese exposure was, it was minimal compared to what the IFA index was. So it was kind of an easy pitch to hit. And the question is, now that Japan's overall valuation has come down as a part of that index, that it will become more difficult to beat again in the future.
Yeah, I think 10 years is a long time period. You have to question the survivorship bias there. Hmm. But in even a 5-year period, if you look at the numbers, the active managers are being bested by the indexes.
One area which we haven't really talked about, which I'm a big proponent of using index funds in general, is on the bond side. Because on the bond side, if an active manager makes a good pick on a bond, the differential between the best bonds and the worst bonds is not really that significant. So when you throw in much higher costs and trading costs and management fees, et cetera, it's very hard for bond fund managers, active bond fund managers, to do better than the index over long periods of time. So I think the case is even more compelling there. You have any thoughts on that, Paul? Or?
Yeah, I would agree. And there are the growth area now in the ETF space is in fixed income ETFs. Mm-hmm. So
just to clarify, ETFs are exchange traded funds that trade like stocks, but are generally index funds.
Right. And you can actually buy like the Lehman aggregate. You can buy junk bonds, convertibles, corporate bonds in a stock-like format.
Right, right, right.
They were tested pretty well in the down market and performed well.
Yes.
So I think people are feeling a lot more comfortable.
One area where I tend to favor using active management is in the emerging market area, for the same reasons I question it for small cap, which is there tends to be more turnover in the emerging market indexes. It was just came up that Israel is going to come out, I think, out of the MSCI Emerging Market Index. So it's a big amount of turnover. And if you can hire an active manager with similar turnover as a high turnover index fund, it seems like that might make some sense. Any contrary argument to that?
Well, I think the distinction between developed and emerging countries is kind of an artificial one. And I think if you really looked at a country by its liquidity, its investability, the institutions that stand behind the country, that's more important than whether an index vendor declares a country emerging or developed.
Is there any area where you would say it makes sense to use active managers?
Not that I can think of.
Not that you're biased.
I haven't found any yet.
Well, just for the general audience out there, we're not an all-passive shop, and I know that Hayden, you're not either.
Absolutely.
We do have active managers, and we are able to screen and find them. The problem is that they're not always the same people. Right. We're able to screen them, but in order to really for an active manager outpace over the long course of time for one manager to do it, you'd have to go and prove that you could do it for 40 years, and there hasn't yet that I know of been an individual investing for that long.
Right. Well, the 40 years is it to do it in a statistically significant
fashion.
Yeah,
that's right.
Which,
So, but we're not proposing that you have no active management in your portfolios. I'm sorry, much to Paul's chagrin. But we do believe that, for instance, our portfolios are 60% core passive. I'm not sure, Hayden, what composition yours are.
Yeah, I don't know the exact percentage, but it's probably not that different. I'm a little lower now, partly because I'm worried about what I call the treasury bubble, which is makes the bond indexes a lot. Represents a big part of the bond indexes.
Right. You've been listening to On the Money with Hayden Traub and Gary Pomerantz. I can't believe that the show's over already. It feels like it just lasted a moment. If you wanted to find out more information about any economic circumstances, you can contact our website, www.lexingtonwealth.com or
traubcapital.com.
For the latest financial headlines or to contact the host, go to bostonbusinessradio.com and join us every day at 6 p.m. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of their respective parties and not those of this show's producers or the station. You're listening to On the Money on WBNW AM 1120 and the Money Matters Network.
Number one Italian restaurant, number one fine dining, and number one lunch in the area. Those are just a couple of the accolades Bella Costa Restaurant has earned in the Reader's Choice Metro West newspaper. Bella Costa, a family-owned restaurant since 1986. With quality food, great prices, and unsurpassed hospitality, Bella Costa has earned the best of the best for Italian dining and excellence 6 years running. Bella Costa's warm personal service creates a home-like atmosphere. Bella Costa's chef, owner, and staff use only the freshest ingredients, top-quality meats, and fresh seafood delivered daily. Bella Costa can host your function, baby shower, wedding reception, or family gathering in their function room and can custom make your menu from their generous menu offerings. Bella Costa will be sure to attend to your every need and make that function the one you remember. Bella Costa can cater your event wherever you choose. Bella Costa, 147 Constituent Road, Framingham. That's in the Colonial Shopping Center, where Routes 126 and 30 intersects. Bella Costa, easy to find, easy to remember, and always quick to return.
You're listening to the Money Matters Radio Network, WBNW AM 1120 Concord, Boston, WPLM 1390 Plymouth, and WESO 970 Southbridge.
Weeds and crabgrass are taking over your lawn. Traditional lawn weed killers control either lawn weeds or crabgrass, but not both. Why do half the job when there's Bayer Advanced all-in-one lawn weed and crabgrass killer? It kills lawn weeds plus crabgrass without harming your lawn. Just hook to the hose and go. Nothing's faster or easier. And now it's raining.